It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, it's Food Friday, and our guest has lots of pasta advice. She'll walk us through how to make our own homemade pasta, plus pasta sauces and great recipes with pasta, whether it's homemade or store-bought. First, most voters in 2020, about 64% of them, voted early in person or by mail instead of in person on Election Day. That's according to numbers from the Federal Election Commission. And there's a lot of interest in early voting in the 2022 midterms. Early turnout has been high. Over 5.5 million people have already voted in person or by mail. But the future of these early voting techniques is unclear. After the 2020 election, 18 states, most with Republican-controlled legislatures, added some restrictions on earlier voting. 22 states expanded it. Some other states were mixed bags. We're talking now about how people choose to vote, what mail-in and early voting looks like after changes following the 2020 election, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. How did you vote in the 2020 election? Not who did you vote for, but how did you cast your ballot? Was it a one-off? You did it differently, maybe because it was a peak COVID? Or do you like the option of voting by mail or voting in person early? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Oh, yeah. How are you voting this year? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Paul Hernson is a professor of political science at the University of Connecticut. Paul, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. I have to tell you, I listened to Wisconsin Public Radio while I was a grad student in the political science department at UW, and I'm just tickled pink to be on your show.
Well, welcome back to Wisconsin. Good to have you with us then.
Thank you.
Let's go back to 2020. We had a lot of states had some form of earlier voting options in place. And because of COVID, a lot more people took them up on it. Can you talk about what we saw in fall of 2020?
Yeah, it's the way things work here is under the U.S. Constitution, states have broad authority to administer elections. And as a result of COVID, quite a bit did. But first, let's talk about the variation. So there's absentee mail with an excuse, age, disability, you're going to be out of town, you have to meet a pre-existing excuse. There's no excuse absentee mail ballots where you just ask for it. There's universal mail voting where if you're a registered voter, it comes in the mail. And as you said, there's early in-person voting, and of course, Election Day always works. So, you know, the states made some decisions to respond, and those decisions gave voters options and their habits, their prior experiences, or their familiarity, let's say, and their partisanship structured their choices. So pre-pandemic, 30 states had no excuse absentee mail options, including Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. 16 said, you can have a mail ballot, but you need to have an excuse. And that actually includes where I live right now, Connecticut. And 5 had this universal mail elections where you, if you're registered to vote, you automatically get a ballot. And roughly 40 plus had early in-person voting. The pandemic certainly scared a lot of people, rightfully so, and 16 states changed what they were doing. 36 said you can get an absentee or a mail ballot without an excuse, or you can call fears of COVID a reasonable excuse. 5 kept restrictive excuse requirements, and 10 offered universal mail elections. 5 of those previously were no excuse voting states, and a few more added early in-person voting. So with those options in place, voters were able to make some decisions about how to vote for the first time. I guess before we jump into that, I would say that, you know, there weren't that many states that changed because quite a few had a safe, convenient voting option. Mm-hmm. But among those that did, states with a Democratic governor, democratically controlled statehouse were more likely to make it easier, more convenient, safer to vote than those controlled by the Republican Party, and the states with divided control were in the middle.
Right. I want to get into another question here before we bring on some callers at 800-642-1234. As you mentioned, a lot of people took advantage of some opportunity to do something other than show up at the polls on Election Day. The big question now is, are people going to keep doing that having had that experience. So in states where people have an option of voting on election day or doing something else, what are you watching for to see if those habits persist?
Well, you know, you put your finger right on it. Habits are important. So what we know is people who are familiar with something are more likely to use it than people who are introduced to it for the first time. So in 2020, you know, lazy expectations for 2022. So voters in the states that kept a policy where you could, you know, ask for an absentee ballot, you know, to come to you in the mail, and you didn't have to have an excuse. Among those voters were 22 percentage points more likely to vote by mail than voters who were given the option for the first time. So that shows you familiarity is really important. And of course, those voters who were familiar with voting by mail, no excuse absentee voted, were 27 points more likely to vote by mail than those in states where you had to have an excuse. So the expectation would be that people who are familiar with it, because they used it prior to 2020 or in 2022 or prior to 2020 or during 2020, will be more likely to vote with a mail ballot. Of course, partisanship is important. You know, how you voted really wasn't a very partisan issue prior to 2020, but it did become very important then. And Democrats were 13 percentage points more likely than incumbents to vote by mail, and a whopping 26 points more likely than Republicans. So we would expect that some of this partisan difference will persist, especially because of all the claims of election fraud and the denying the outcome of the election.
Let's bring on a caller now. Lisa is with us in Madison. Lisa, hi.
Hi. I did vote absentee. And part of the main reason I did that is I'm a poll worker and I will not be working at the location that I vote at. And I am working the polls from 6 in the morning until close.
Whoa.
So without absentee, I wouldn't be able to vote.
Well, great reason to vote, Lisa. Thanks for doing that. That's a long shift. Have you done that before?
Yeah, I have. You know, it gets to be a long day, but it's worth it. And I'm happy I can do it.
Lisa, thanks for doing that important work, and thanks for sharing that story. Paul, Lisa, she doesn't need an excuse to get an absentee ballot in Wisconsin, but that sounds like a pretty good one.
Yeah, Wisconsin's pretty good about that, and it is a good reason, and I'm familiar with other people that do that as well.
Lisa, thanks for that call. We're talking to University of Connecticut political science professor Paul Hernson about the way people voted in 2020, early voting options, mail voting options versus in-person, and how we're voting in the current midterms. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on mail-in voting? Do you prefer it? Did you vote early in person or by mail, maybe for the first time in 2020? You're doing a repeat performance next week. Or have you already done it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now, we're picking up the conversation about how people choose to cast their ballots with University of Connecticut political science professor Paul Hernson. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you vote? How do you like to vote? Do you think there needs to be a change to make things easier or add more regulations? Either way, call in at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Mark is with us in Door County. Mark, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I'm up here in Ellison Bay, so way up in the northern tip of Door County, and it's a very polarized place as far as I can tell from a political point of view. It's kind of like there's a ton of signs and they're sort of half and half in the Door County. So it's a very kind of diverse place. I voted absentee, no questions asked absentee. I got used to doing that because I lived in Utah. Utah is a very Republican state, and all your voting is by mail in Utah, and everything seems to work great. So I voted no questions absentee in this general election. I voted in person in the primary. I thought everything went great. I'll be really disappointed if they get rid of no questions asked absentee voting in Wisconsin.
Mark, thanks for the call. Paul, have we seen any states moving away from no questions asked, no excuse needed absentee voting?
You know, there's been some move to make it more difficult. to shorten the window to apply for a ballot. Where I live in Connecticut, we have pretty restrictive voting laws. There's no early in-person voting. And prior to the pandemic, there was no opportunity to get a mail ballot. During the pandemic, under an emergency order, we were able to get it. There, you could mail it back or put it in a drop box. And they extended that emergency order through 2022. However, once 2024 rolls around, we will not have that no excuse absentee mail ballot option unless there's a big change. In Connecticut, it's very difficult to make that change.
Interesting. Thanks for that call. Now, I often think of Connecticut as a more blue state, Utah as a more red state. But here we have you say Connecticut is more restrictive. Utah makes it pretty easy to vote by mail. It doesn't always go the partisan way we might expect.
That is true. It certainly doesn't. There are other issues. Sometimes race comes into consideration. Seniority comes into consideration. Election administrators often want to try to cater to the needs of their constituents. It's not always so easy, though. When you think about fixing an election, sometimes you fix it to address a problem like a pandemic, and you make it, you know, and people and policymakers put in options that make it easier and safer to vote. And that's wonderful. And other times, politicians put the fix in a way that favors certain candidates, certain parties, maybe certain factions in parties. So there's always these two words or ways of interpreting the word fix when it comes to fixing elections. And partisan advantage is one of the things, but also meeting voters' concerns and needs is another.
Thanks again for that call. Sherilyn joins us now in Delavan. Sherilyn, hi.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. So I've always either voted on election day or voted early in person. This was my first year because I thought I might have a conflict that I requested an absentee ballot. And I can just tell you the stress that I went through filling out the ballot and then, you know, checking to see is every I dotted, every T crossed, and then I have to have an adult, which was my husband, that make sure the ballot was blank when I got it and that I filled it in with nobody helping me. It just made me feel like a child and like I couldn't do anything right. And it was just a very demeaning exercise.
Interesting, Sherilyn. Thanks for sharing that. Actually, Sherilyn, are you going to do it again or are you going to go back to in person?
No. And I did drop the ballot off in person. I didn't stick it in the mail. I dropped it off in person at the county clerk because the whole process just made me worry that my vote wasn't going to be counted.
Sherilyn, thanks for the call. And Paul, there are some nitpicky points here. If your witness doesn't fill in their complete address, including zip code, there are concerns that could be challenged. Sherilyn found this a stressful experience for some of those reasons.
Well, that's not unusual. It can be more stressful and also there are more likely to be errors committed. And it's not like you can say, I messed up my ballot. Can I have another one, please? In terms of dropping it off, that's another very interesting point. Many people where I live in Connecticut requested a mail ballot, and many of us dropped it off and put it into one of those, big metal drop boxes. And that boosted our confidence. Interestingly enough, a few places are getting rid of those drop boxes.
Including Wisconsin under a court order. Right. We had them for some years. Rural communities especially were using drop boxes. Now, under a court ruling, they've said no. According to state law, that shouldn't be a thing anywhere. Are we seeing other, is Wisconsin alone in that, or you're saying other states are dropping drop boxes?
Yes. Well, Texas law recently banned them, and New Hampshire eliminated them after its governor terminated an emergency order that was in place during the pandemic. So a few other states have taken that position, that direction.
Time for one more caller. Jay is with us in Two Rivers. Jay, hi.
Yes, good afternoon. Well, I've been voting for about 50 years, the last 40 as an independent. And I think that voting should be as easy as possible in every form, mail-in, absentee. And it's quite distressing that in the last 12 years or so, one party has made it their mission to reverse everything that's worked well for beyond 50 years.
Jay, thanks for the call. And Jay, talking about efforts to tighten up some of those easier election voting methods, citing security reasons often. Could you talk about Jay's concerns, Paul?
Well, I think his concerns are real. You know, when the goal of making it easier to vote is to broaden access to broaden access and just to make it more convenient so people don't have to take off from work so they can do it when it works for them. And to be frank, Democrats have been somewhat more likely to push that kind of reform than Republicans, but not by all that much. What happened was we are in a very competitive situation with elections and control of government. And the issue was politicized in 2020. And for better or worse, now people are thinking, wow, every vote's going to count in this Senate race or this House race or the presidential race. And it might work to our advantage to make it difficult for certain population groups to vote because they support the opposite party. Adding all the election denier arguments and politicizing how we vote was just it's a terrible thing. And it's ironic, too, because prior to 2020, when we looked at people who used convenience voting methods, Republicans tended to favor mail a little bit more than Democrats, and Democrats tended to favor voting early in person more than Republicans. But since 2020, voting by mail ballots have just become attacked, and I think unreasonably so.
Paul, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Paul Hernson is a professor of political science at the University of Connecticut. He talked to us today about how people are voting in the midterms, not who they're voting for, but how physically they're casting their ballots after many states passed new laws about mail-in voting and early voting following the 2020 election. For an election taking place this year, the candidates for governor have spent a lot of time talking about the race for president 2 years from now. And there's a good reason for that. As Sean Johnson reports, whoever gets elected could have a huge say in setting the rules for Wisconsin elections for years to come.
Less than 2 weeks before Election Day, former President Barack Obama visited a packed high school gymnasium in Milwaukee to deliver closing arguments for Wisconsin Democrats. He had the crowd roaring as he talked about abortion rights, protecting Social Security, and helping people pay their bills. And then Obama turned to an issue that's not at the top of every voter's mind.
If you do need another reason to vote, consider the fact that democracy is also on the ballot.
Obama spoke at length about democracy, about how life had changed since the January 6th insurrection, and about how it would be dangerous if self-governance is lost. For Democrats, the warnings are a way to mobilize voters who might stay home in a midterm election. Republicans have used a similar approach when they talk about election integrity. Underpinning all of this talk is a hard reality. If Republican Tim Michaels defeats Democratic Governor Tony Evers, Republicans will change the way elections are run in a state that's as politically divided as they come. Barry Burden directs the Elections Research Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
There could likely be big changes to election law in Wisconsin between 2022 and 2024.
For example, Michaels wants to eliminate the bipartisan Wisconsin Elections Commission, which is currently run by an appointed board split 3-3 between Republicans and Democrats. He says the new agency will be different.
I'm going to call it the Wisconsin Election Integrity Group. It'll have representation from all 8 congressional districts.
But Michaels hasn't said who will choose those members. Burden says there would be nothing keeping Michaels and the legislature from running the agency with only Republican appointees.
Yeah, there are really no limits on what the legislature could do in terms of creating a new structure. It might be a board that's entirely partisan.
Democratic Elections Commissioner Ann Jacobs says she has a different concern. Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson has floated the idea of having lawmakers oversee federal elections, which is known as the independent state legislature theory.
So that is a profound threat to democracy across the entire United States and including in Wisconsin.
A case arguing this theory is pending before the U.S. Supreme Court. There's another open question when it comes to regulating absentee voting. Last year, Republicans hired former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman to investigate the 2020 election. In March, he issued a report calling for minimizing absentee voting. Gableman has since been fired, but he still holds considerable sway in the Republican Party. At a rally for Michaels in August, former President Donald Trump pointed out Gableman in the crowd multiple times just to say thank you.
Justice Michael Gableman, for the job that you've done and the incredible strength that you've shown.
Rick Essenberg, the president of the conservative Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, notes that people used to need a reason to vote absentee in Wisconsin. Now, voters don't need an excuse, and the practice is popular.
But I don't see that changing. I think, you know, voter convenience is probably going to win out with these elected officials.
But Republicans have promised to restrict absentee voting in smaller ways, including by limiting who can say they're indefinitely confined when it comes to voting. There's no need to guess about these proposals. GOP lawmakers passed almost 20 of them already. Evers vetoed the bills, and Michaels says he'd sign them. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up after the news, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. We're talking about how to make our own pasta and pasta sauces from scratch, plus some recipes, whether you buy the pasta at a store or make your own at home. You can find a few recipes. Start cooking right now over at WPR.org/Food Friday. And hey, if you make your own pasta regularly, or if you've tried and failed, or if you're too scared, like me, want to hear about it right now, you can email ideas@WPR.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, new polling shows a majority of Americans are concerned about the threat of politically motivated violence. We'll talk with an expert on conflict who says we can bring down that tension, and good news, we already know how to do it. Now it's time for Food Friday, and I am looking for a little help from you today. Our scheduled guest, you may have heard me talking about making your own pasta. Well, we're not reaching that guest, but it's been a while since we've done a Food Friday focused on you. So you can call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Want to hear your cooking stories. What are you excited about cooking maybe tonight or this weekend? Is there something still that you're cooking out of your own garden or your local farmer's market that you are enjoying a lot? What is something you would like to learn about when it comes to cooking? Why, that could give us an idea for future Food Fridays, hopefully with guests who show up. And is there a food fail that you would be interested in sharing with us today? Something you tried to cook and it didn't come out quite the way you wanted to. And how about your next cooking challenge? You know, one for me might be making my own pasta someday. Something I've always thought, yeah, it's too complicated for old Rob, but maybe I'll give it a try sometime. You can join in now, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. While you pick up and dial that phone, I'll share some of my answers to the questions I just posed. Tonight, I'm going to cook a squash curry. I got a couple of them delicata squashes. I'm not sure yet. Chicken, I got some tofu, got to be one or the other. Coconut milk or sour curry, I got some options to work with. I'm going to serve it over rice, cube up that squash, cook it in for a while. Some spices, not too spicy though for me. And I've a tip I learned on Food Friday, I've got an old coffee grinder and I've got cumin seeds. I'm going to grind them up and coriander seeds and some black peppercorns, and that is probably the biggest lesson I've learned from Food Friday, is grinding those spices to get extra flavor. It's not a lot of extra work. Second lesson is using fresh herbs. I just made a squash soup last week. Lots of cilantro in it. Cilantro goes in right at the end because the way I used to cook, it went in at the beginning and it ended up, you know, still being green, but kind of green and flavorless and useless. Cooking fails. You may have heard me talk about this one before. So I'm mom's side of the family. It's all Polish. My grandma made pierogies. This is a big chore. And in my 20s, I'm like, I'm going to try to make pierogies by guessing. I didn't have a cookbook. I didn't have a recipe or anything. That is one of the few inedible outcomes I've had in my life of cooking. A pot with floating dough and floating stuffing ingredients. Yeah, there's a lot of thinking that goes into that pierogi making. Looking for your cooking stories. What are you cooking now? Share a cooking fail. What is a kitchen challenge you are looking to take up? Maybe for the holiday season. Join in at what are you cooking right now or tonight? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. You are the star of the show today, and Mark is going to start us off in Suamico. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Good. What's your cooking plan?
So I didn't know that the rain was going to come this soon. Otherwise, I was going to grill. But I had these egg white wrappers in the fridge, and I've heard that they're really good for me. So I'm just going to my local fish house, and I'm going to buy some fish. I'm going to deep fry some fish and try those egg white wrappers for my fish tacos.
What is an egg white wrapper? I think it's literally like a taco or a tortilla, but made out of egg whites?
Yes, and they're literally, you can buy them flavored, but the kind that I have are flavorless, and they kind of take on the flavor of whatever's inside of it. So I'm really anxious to see how this turns out.
I'm excited too, Mark, and it's fish, right? You got to have a particular kind of fish in mind to fry up for the taco?
Well, I was going to deep fry some cod. So okay. You know, we're in Wisconsin, so we got to do that, right?
Straight ahead. Yeah, where can you get cod in Wisconsin? I don't know. Mark, thank you so much for starting us off at 800-642-1234 on a special, unplanned, caller-only edition of Food Friday. Looks like we got some people getting queued up here. Here we go. Lauren is with us in Algoma. Lauren, hi. Oop, are you there, Lauren? All right, I think we fumbled that a little. How about, let's try it. Lauren, are you there? Huh. Well, that's not going to be good if we can't pick up callers. All right, let's try it one more. What do you think, Trina? Can we get Lauren? All right, she looks like...
Hi, can you hear
there,
me?
There, yay! That was on our end, Lauren. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, you were talking about how you're we're making pierogies, and it reminded me of my Eastern European heritage. Something that we do is we make this, it's our go-to dish when we don't know what else we're doing, and it's so homey, and it reminds me of my grandma, and it's just so easy. So what you do is you take Polish kielbasa, you grill it up with some onions. We like to caramelize those onions first, and then you put a can of tomato paste in there, fill up that can with water, put that in there, and that's all you need.
Wow.
And then we usually serve it up with some broccoli and some lemon onion rice, and the flavors sound really silly, but it was my go-to meal when I'd get home from college. It was easy, and it's something that we do once a week at my home, and it's just delicious.
We had something kind of similar when my kids were younger. It was we'd have store-bought kielbasa and just like fry it up with potatoes and carrots and onions, and if people wanted, they could put some ketchup on it. It was like literally the easiest thing to cook in the world. Now, do you have a good line? Do you have like a good source of good kielbasa?
Actually, yeah. So in Algoma, there is a couple local meat markets. And so one of them is, well, this is in Sturgeon Bay, Marchant Meat. So I go there to grab kielbasa, or sometimes we do ring bologna, whatever's on sale, whatever's cheaper.
Nice. Lauren, thank you so much for sharing that. That sounds great and super easy. It's a special caller-only edition of Food Friday. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with whatever you want to tell us about, what you're cooking tonight, what you're afraid to cook but want to learn, you name it. 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Kurt is with us now in Madison. Kurt, hi.
Hi. I mostly cook. I rarely bake, but because we're entering into that season, I wanted to share a trick about pumpkin pie that my mother taught me.
Oh, what's the trick?
Many people always ask, oh my God, this is so good. What am I detecting here? So buy the traditional Libby's pumpkin in a can and take the sugar and divide it 1/3 white, 2/3 dark. And then the secret ingredient is an 1/8 of a teaspoon of white pepper.
White pepper?
Yes.
Now, how does, like, does it end up tasting peppery, or does it just kind of bring out the other flavors?
What the white pepper imparts is a little bit of a bite in the pumpkin. And then everybody always comments about how, and I think it helps accent the additional brown sugar in there to get it. It's really not sweeter. It's just a little bit more, have a caramel component to it. So, yeah, my mom, I'll never forget, and she told me, says, well, I always add a little bit of white pepper.
Interesting. Now, I'm excited about this, Kurt.
I've never told anybody.
Thank you for sharing that. And I'm excited about it because I've mentioned this on the air. Cinnamon, I have this weird contact reaction to it. It doesn't kill me, but I shouldn't eat it. And so something that's going to add a little extra flavor to my pumpkin pie, that sounds like a great idea. Is there cinnamon in your pumpkin pie, you know, the pie, pumpkin itself?
Actually, there's a particular outfit out of Milwaukee. I don't know if I can plug a company.
Sure.
But they do custom spices, and I'm really fussy about all ingredients. So, yeah, when it comes to cinnamon, there's like 5 different types of cinnamon that are available through Elise, the store I buy from. So, yeah, if you want to get even more accent or bring it down, you can go from a mild type cinnamon to something that has actually got quite a bit of bite in it. But in that case, I may not use the white pepper then because it might really overdrive it.
Interesting. Kurt, thank you so much. White pepper in my pumpkin pie. I'm going to try that, taking your food-related calls on a caller edition of Food Friday at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Mark is with us in New Berlin. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I discovered delicata squash this year, and it's fantastic. A friend of a friend got some from somebody who was growing them, and I like squash, but I loved delicata, and just cutting it in so you get circles, don't slice the long way, cut it so you got circles, don't scrape anything out, the mesh and the seeds in there, mm-hmm. All great, a little bit of olive oil on them, brush it on, and bake them until they're soft. Well, today, when I was baking mine, not today, but a week or so ago, my second last squash, I cut the whole thing up. I put it in the oven, and I forgot it was in there until I heard it a little bit, and then I smelt a little bad. I was, oh man, I was mad because you know it was hard to find to begin with, and then I cooked it. But rather than throwing it away, I thought as it cooled off, I thought I just want to try a piece of it and see how bad it tastes. I had the same flavor. I had no burnt flavor on it at
nice.
All. I couldn't believe it. It's such a great squash. You can burn it in the oven and you still use it.
That is awesome, Mark. Thanks a lot. I'm a big fan of the delicata squash, too. Recent discovery for me as well. It's Food Friday. We are taking your food-related calls, your cooking-related calls. What are you going to cook this weekend? Grill? In the kitchen? You name it. Is there a kitchen adventure you want to embark on? Something new you want to learn? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Hey, if you hit a busy signal or a message, I see a couple lines have opened up. Try again. 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll take more of your calls coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We are continuing our spontaneous caller-only edition of Food Friday. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your latest cooking triumphs or failures, what you want to make next, what is on the menu tonight or this weekend. Call 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Nina is with us in Menasha. Nina, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to share that, well, I am I'm biracial. My mother's Eastern European and my father is Mexican Spanish. So I grew up eating soul food from both parts of the world, two parts of the world. I grew up making homemade egg noodles that my grandma showed us, and we'd fry it. You put it in a, you make your homemade noodles, you boil them, and then, you know, al dente, and then you put them in a pan and pan fry them with butter or lard, you know, bacon grease, and with sliced up cabbage, sort of chunky. And that was, and then you can put caraway seeds in there if you want, and just salt and pepper. And that was cabbage and noodles. I grew up eating that. That was nice. Wonderful. And then I, on my dad's side, I learned how to make corn tortillas and homemade flour tortillas, which I still make today. And that is, everybody loves that. I love to make those for people.
Okay. I got to ask, Nina, have you done some fusion cooking? It's like something, little Eastern European, little Mexican in the same dish.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, well, something to try. Yeah. I mean, sauerkraut would be great in tacos.
I love cabbage in tacos.
Sure. Well, there you go. Nina, thank you so much for sharing.
This winter, I want to make homemade tamales.
Oh, sign me up. I'll eat some. Thank you so much for calling in, Nina, at 800-642-1234. A lot of good food in that family. Brian joins us now in Dickeyville. Brian, hi.
Hello, sir. How are you today?
Good. What did you want to bring up? Tell us about, Brian.
Well, pumpkin bread, fresh from, you know, the pumpkin. The edible is what I use this year, as well as yard-to-table chicken noodle soup and chicken rice soup.
Yard-to-table. So you've got your own chickens?
Yep. Started this morning at 6 with 10 white meat birds. I got 8 in the freezer and 2 stewing right now, or, you know, simmering for the soup.
Wow, that's about as fresh as soup gets. That is awesome.
That's a big day as well. Yeah, it's a good day.
Awesome, Brian. Thank you so much for sharing that. Pumpkin bread. I've had a couple failures with pumpkin bread over the years, and I tracked it down to the baking soda. You got to buy new baking soda every now and then, it turns out, or it gets weird and goopy inside. Not good. Don't recommend. Thank you, Brian. That sounds great, though. We've got Maggie and Charles on the line in Wausau. Hi, y'all.
That I like to make sometimes at home, which is taking a head of romaine, and I cut it in half and just kind of like pour olive oil into the open side of it, and then do salt and pepper and throw it upside down on a pan on the stove and just like saute it for like 5-10 minutes max. And then I'll usually split over like 5 on the front, a little bit on the back, and throw some dressing and seeds or whatever on there and do kind of a roasted salad. It's something I saw once in Hawaii at a restaurant, and I really haven't seen it anywhere else, but I share it all the time with friends and family because I think it's so good.
Maggie, that sounds great, and I've seen that at restaurants. So this was new and alien to me. How long do you cook that that romaine? Because obviously it would be easy to overcook, I would think.
Yeah, I kind of do like a medium-high heat for about 5 minutes in the front. It depends how big your head is and how big your pan is. But you get a decent amount of oil, probably about 5 minutes on the front, and then I like to flip it over onto its back and let it just get a little bit of a sear on the back as well.
All right. My head's pretty big and my nose too. Oh, the head of romaine. I get it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. Taking your Food Friday calls. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are you excited to cook? Have you done a big project over the last week? Maybe today, or something on the agenda, on the menu for tomorrow you want to tell us about? Or is there something you want to learn about in the future? Maybe we could talk about it on Food Friday sometime. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. A couple lines just opened up. 800-642-1234. Herb joins us now in Milwaukee. Herb, hello.
Hello. Well, the problem is making a turkey, there's never enough gravy. And so the simple trick I came up with, and for a few more days anyway, you can find turkey parts. So I just buy, you know, backs and tails and wings and stuff like that, the less desirable, and make up about a half a gallon of a good, strong turkey broth. And that then I use that as the basis for the gravy that I could make as much gravy as I want to that way, which is convenient for mashed potatoes and also freezing leftovers. But you got to act because the parts disappear in the stores right about now.
Oh, okay. So you got to get them this weekend if you want those extraneous turkey components to make that gravy.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And what kind of flavors, Herb, go into your turkey gravy? Anything special apart from those turkey parts?
No. Well, we put, just a little bit of, parsley and, that's about it. Just the, turkey
straight
parts.
Up.
And then at the end, I enrich it with a little bit of half and half and that, make a roux. That way you have a little fat left over, you can make a roux and then thicken the gravy with that, with the turkey fat, which doesn't sound exactly like hell food, but you only live once.
Yeah, it's a special occasion. Herb, thank you so much for sharing that advice. Let's go to Rick now in Madison. Rick, hi.
Hello. The recipe I'm going to describe to you, we've never made before. We're experimenters with cooking and we like international food. And so we're going to try to make a thing called Dorowat, D-O-R-O-W-A-T. It's the national dish of Ethiopia. It's a chicken dish that starts out with four red onions finely chopped. It takes 2 hours to cook it.
Mm-hmm. And they cook those onions down a long time, right? Real slow and long?
It must be. The biggest thing is, if you're ever going to try to make it, you can get the recipes on all these online recipe sites. You have to immediately make a trip to the herb store because you need things like fenugreek and all these spices that I've never heard of before. In fact, we had to go online and actually order like three different ones that were specially made for this dish in Ethiopia.
Wow.
So, at any rate, I'm looking forward to making it. It's called Dorowat.
Yeah. Rick, thank you so much. I've had Dorowat in restaurants. I've never made it myself, though. So you're going all in, though. I love it, Rick. Good luck. I hope it comes out great. Taking your calls on this edition of Food Friday at 800-642-1234. Carissa joins us now in Rochester, Minnesota. Carissa, hello.
Hi. Good afternoon.
What did you want to share with us today, Carissa?
I want to share a funny story about a food failure. And this is actually throwing my dad, my poor, wonderful dad, under the bus. He is a huge fan of food of all kinds. He's not picky, but he does not cook. So when my parents got married years ago, my mom would make pie crust from scratch. And my dad thought that was the best thing ever. And then kids came along and job changes and moves and that sort of thing. And mom started buying pie crust from the store. Dad started complaining for years. This became a running thing. So she finally said to him about 5 years ago, "You want homemade pie crust? You try and make it yourself." And as I stated, a failure at the beginning, kind of giving away the punchline. There was flour from, we were at my sister's house for Thanksgiving 5 or 6 years ago. There was flour from one end of the kitchen to the other. And in the end, it wasn't very good. So lesson learned, my dad doesn't complain at all about pie crust from the store anymore. And maybe there will be an attempt at it again at some point. But it was, I think he understands now why store-bought crust is.
Fantastic. Carissa, that's a great story. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, I have made my own pie crusts. I like an easy pat in the pan recipe, but I got to say, all things considered, I pretty much just buy a pie crust these days to make a pie or a quiche. Hey, thanks to everybody for helping out. I have a bunch more people on the line now, and we're out of time, though. Thank you so much for calling in with your cooking stories. You can keep doing it, by the way. Can maybe share them on the show next week. Email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. You can even maybe post a picture of something you are in the midst of cooking right now. And hopefully it isn't just a big puff of flour all over the kitchen this time. And as always, check out lots of great recipes at wpr.org/foodfriday. If you don't know what to make tonight or tomorrow, just keep scrolling. You'll find something eventually. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, a Wisconsin psychologist, Ryan Martin, looks at anger in our political system and the unhealthy expressions and the healthy expressions of anger in politics. And you can join in with your own story, what you're seeing maybe in your community. That's Monday morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. Yesterday on the show, we heard about shipwrecks and the Titanic in particular, and we have some more stories that you shared about your interest in the topic. David from Warrens called to say, he says, since I was 8 or 9 years old, I've been one of those people who's obsessed with the Titanic, even before the movie came out. I have endless useless facts. For example, the Titanic was 882.5 feet long and over 45,000 tons, I think. David, you thought right. I double-checked those. Your facts are accurate. Randy from Ripon says, I'm a sailor. One of the things we have in our sailboat, in newer style ones, it's called a bailer. Because when you're racing, you get water in the sailboat. And you open up the bailer, it siphons water out of the boat. Randy says he doesn't know why the captain of the Titanic didn't go full steam in reverse to try to drain the bow. Maybe they didn't have that knowledge back then. I don't know that stuff. I don't know if that would work. Tony from Egg Harbor says there's an error in the Titanic. The pipe that Leo DiCaprio was shackled to was a welded pipe. All the piping in that era had been screwed and flanged, not welded. I looked that up. My knowledge of maritime welding is a little sketchy. Looks like Tony was right. That didn't really start till World War II. Thanks for the stories. This is Central Time.